Welcome to Paper Money, the bi-weekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Gosu to Go, Asmodee Editions to Ancient China. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is September 24th, 2010. And Rhett, I feel a little bit like Grover in that kid's book. There's a monster at the end of this book.
Uh-huh.
Because I keep telling people there's a guest on the show, and we're going to get to the end of the show, and I have to go, the guest is me! we don't have a guest this week. Part of that is that I'm on the road again this weekend, and the other reason is that we have, after complaining we didn't have any listener mail, we got three great letters in this week, so we're going to take some time to talk about that. But anyways, those of you looking for a fantastic guest, it's me! And I'll say it at the beginning of the show. Never mind, I thought that was a clever bit, Rhett. Apparently it's been too long since you've been reading that book to your kid.
Just one of those mornings.
That's fine. So, all right, note to self, September 24th, not the morning for Rhett Kipp. So,
that's right.
So, let's launch right into the news, because we have Toys R Us news this week.
I love Toys R Us news.
That's right. Let's play the theme.
Toys R Us news.
And they've been lacking for so long.
Yeah, they have. And so they've made up for that by appearing twice in this week's news. You can always tell it's like the unofficial start of the fourth quarter. Really, it's when TRU starts. So when their press releases start getting play. Our first story is TRU. Toys R Us announces they're going to open pop-ups for the holidays. Toys R Us will open 600 temporary pop-up quote unquote shops. For the holiday selling season in malls across the country, according to the Wall Street Journal. This move, which takes advantage of vacant mall spaces conveniently left by competitor KB Toys, will more than double the retailer's number of U.S. stores and will provide employment for approximately 10,000 underpaid workers. Sorry, I also added underpaid. That's it. That's from playthings.com, their email. And Rhett, we talked about this last year. We think this is a good strategy in that Toys R Us basically gets, let's face it, big box toys. So these guys are making 50% of their money for the year in this quarter. So why not, you know, double the number of stores you have just for a quarter and then get rid of them?
Absolutely, and I think it's a brilliant strategy because it also puts them in the malls, which are, you know, somewhat underutilized, so they're probably getting a great price on these right now.
Yep.
And, you know, it goes back with the theory that we've talked about with standard retailers and why to expand your fourth quarter inventory. You know, people don't want to have to go to a new place to get something else. And even if, you know, the True is right across the street, you don't have to cross the street. You can just be in the mall, do your shopping.
And when that street is a six-lane, semi-divided highway between two malls, yeah, it's a big thing. And, you know, I'll say this, too. There's a lot of these big guys will buy things either on consignment or in such a way that they can return what they don't sell. So my guess is if you go into one of these kiosks, there is almost no financial risk to Toys R Us.
No, it's almost certain. I mean, I don't know if their situation still stays the same as it was in previous years, but, you know, they used to have 100% return capability.
Yes.
One of the reasons you would see games stacked floor to ceiling.
And also one of the reasons why if you happen to work at a company that does game fulfillment, why after the holidays you can gauge just how well the companies you're dealing with are doing based on how many games come back.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, the other thing that Toys R Us made the news for this week is that they released their Hot Holidays Toys list for Christmas. Boiling it down to the Fabulous 15, there is only one game on their Fabulous 15 toys list, and that is Minotaurus from LEGO Systems. It's one of their buildable games. And I might add, it's in stock at our new sponsor, GameThonic.com. But this is traditional. The games become loss leaders at these guys during the holidays, and they want you to spend much more money on big toys.
Right.
They're not big on pushing the games.
So, no, and you know, there's plenty of stuff out there as far as, you know, these are toy stores, you know, after all. I know. We like to think otherwise, but they are toy stores after all. And, you know, there's a lot of really cool stuff on this list. Personally, I'm waiting for my Sears Big Book to show up this year.
That's right. They were doing that again this year, weren't they?
Yeah.
So after many, many years off, although I'll be happy to see how Sears expanded toy and game section actually does again this year, because they did it as a promo last year and have and they're expanding it this year, that they're actually going to stock toys and games in the stores. They'd really gotten rid of it for a long, long time, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as they even mentioned in their own press reviews, they turned into basically a dad shop. Men went into this place, and there wasn't a whole lot of reasons for the family to go, and they're working to change that. So good
well,
for them.
Well, it's funny because JCPenney, which used to be kind of the same as Sears, took the other route.
Right.
Such that Sears had to promote the softer side of Sears, end quote, to get women to come back into the store. JCPenney went all clothing and basically all women. There's a kids line and stuff like that. But it's become an all clothing store. There's not much else in a JCPenney, and they still have not necessarily broadened back out.
Right.
And Montgomery Ward's went bankrupt, for those of you not following, you know, not in the Chicago area. So like I said, good to see toys and games, one, Minotaurus, back in the spotlight at major retailers. That said, speaking of a game that's not going to be a focus for anyone this holiday season, Rhett, do you want to go with this story? I know how much you love this game.
Oh, I love the lead, which is Vampire Not Eternal.
Yeah, that was from David at the Purple Pond. Nice headline.
I really like that one. White Wolf has announced that they will cease production on the Vampire Eternal Struggle CCG. The company will no longer support this after this year. They're still supporting tournaments, including North American Championship at the Grand Marquis and the European Championship in Paris. There's no further expansions or reprints.
And did they say this before?
Yes, they have dropped the CCG before. As a matter of fact, I'm really surprised that they pushed this forward. But I'm not surprised about this announcement, given their Gen Con presence this year, where they had one of the most interesting booths at Gen Con. They sold liquor, they promoted their LARP, and there wasn't a single White Wolf product to be had in the booth.
There wasn't even, not only could you not buy product at the booth, it wasn't on display at the booth. And as much as I support this, the combination of alcohol and Gen Con, especially on the floor, really, I think as someone who worked a booth this year, I'd start drinking about 5 minutes after the floor opened.
Why'd you take so long?
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, White Wolf is doing some odd stuff, and they always have. But the fact that they're products are nearly all virtual at this point and not physical gives me pause.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see where White Wolf is in a year. It's an interesting business strategy right now.
I'm going to say they're for sale in a year or sold, because I'll be blunt. The PDFs, as cool as they are still augment the printed material.
I agree. The only reason I don't know if the company will be for sale is simply because their parent may sell everything but the electronic rights. I think that they are still planning to do something, be it an MMOG, be it something online variant of the White Wolf universe. I think that was the whole point of acquiring them in the first place.
You know, I still remember when vampires were the bad guys. I'm that old.
Yeah, but that's been a while, and, you know, maybe their problem is their vampires don't sparkle.
Does your Vorpal blade go snicker snack?
Okay. We're dating ourselves here.
I know. Dragon Magazine from 1981. Thank you. Anyways, so it's an interesting one. The Vampire Eternal Struggle CCG not getting support. Not a big surprise given the market environment on CCGs. A little idle speculation on our part about on where White Wolf is headed with their current strategy. Again, a very hip company and always kind of on the leading edge of things. For instance, PSI grew out of their efforts, you know, in the book trade, if I recall. But I'm confused. So, anyways. That's wow.
Glad you went somewhere with that. Yes, PSI did grow out of them, and they do a wonderful job right now.
I'm just saying they've been big innovators. On the other hand, the idea of not having any core product as a printed game for a what we'll call a quote major company is novel.
Yeah, it's like PDF I say, it's an interesting strategy, and I'm waiting to see where they are next year.
PDF publishing has proven a really great way for one- and two-person companies to break the marketplace, to break in. I don't, like I said, to go back to that from a company that traditionally had a line of many, 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 many printed products, I'm finding interesting. So,
message for you, sir. What?
Should we move on to listener mail?
Let's move on to our listener mail, since our interview this week will be very short.
It's me! I'm the guest. Sorry, I'm just going to keep saying that till it's funny.
We're going to be here a while.
That's right. I'll have to get it's a short pause while I go over to iTunes and get some canned applause. Anyways, our listener mail this week, after we said, hey, last week we didn't get any, we got a bunch this week, including a couple of repeat offenders, so let me go ahead and no, I mean that in a good way. They've sent mail in before. So this is from Doug, and Doug has a couple of comments and questions. So this is Doug. Hello, it is Doug again. Yes, just Doug. I have only one name when talking with you folks. However, you may refer to me as Grandmaster B if you desire. And Doug, no, we're not going to refer to you as Grandmaster B. Doug will do. Since you did not have any listener feedback, I will send you some. One, just what in the world is a Euro game? You talk about these all the time, and I cannot find a reference online, nor figure it out based on the context in which you use the term. Rhett, can you answer this question?
Well, in a simplest way, Euro games are general interest family games, usually termed that way because of the fact that they use high-end production qualities.
Someone who markets BattleTech could refer to German games as general interest family games, but okay.
Oh, I would refer to them as general interest family games. I mean, they certainly don't qualify as strategy games in the same sense as a normal board game in our industry.
We're
kind of limited in our dialogue.
I hope none of the heavy Euro guys are listening on that. But yeah, they're in essence, in Germany, family interest games tend to have actual thought involved in playing them. Generally, luck is fairly minimized and strategy is rewarded greatly. If you want to know what a Euro game is, go and take a look at the Rio Grande catalog. Right, I mean that would be the Mayfair and Rio Grande would be the current two leading English language publishers of Euro games. Would that be appropriate? Right, to boil it down to that.
I would say that would be the easiest way to boil it down by example is yes, just look at their catalog. Virtually everything in it is what we would refer to as a Euro game.
Yeah, Settlers of Catan. Most of the railroad. Ticket to Ride, which is Days of Wonder, would classify as a Euro.
Carcassonne
would be another classic Euro title.
Agricola,
yes. Z-Man also punching some Euro games tickets. So those are the kind of games we're talking about. They're not necessarily simulation / war games. They're not board games in that mass market, as in like we're going to see at Home Depot and other big box retailers, the kind of stuff they bring in the fourth quarter. It is a niche market. But it fills that gap between between what is a hobby market game and what is a mass market game, I guess would be another good way to describe it. But let's move on to a second question. And seeing as how I currently reside in West Michigan, I'm uniquely qualified on this. I had said basically that games aren't going to do as bad as being a Chrysler dealer. And he says their recovery has not been half bad. Not great for sure, but far better than a year ago. They closed half their dealers, so the ones that left open are doing much better. You have to buy or fix that Chrysler 300 somewhere. My answer to that is still, show me a new Chrysler product that's coming before 2012. And that's not just a repackage of, you know, a reskin of a current vehicle. Moving on, he says, we need to put our email address somewhere easier to find on our webpage. I agree. So from now on in the show notes, I'll be putting our email address. This will probably result in me getting thousands and thousands and thousands of junk mails a day, but we're going to give it a shot.
Woohoo!
Number four.
I'm glad it's you.
That's right. Number four, your show is groovy, i.e. good. So, Doug, thank you very much. We're glad to be groovy. And I knew what it was even without the example, so thank you. That's Doug. And again, Doug wanted your games to find, so we were happy to do that. Our next letter is from Daniel. Daniel from Sweden. Hi, Ben and Rhett. Really liked the new episode, even if I nearly went into withdrawal. Sorry to hear you did not get much listener feedback on the second last episode with the interview with Zev. Maybe it was so good that it answered all the possible questions the listeners could have had.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, I know. I like Daniel. I like the way he thinks. Ever think of it that way? If you do, it would be a lot more flattering to you two and the work you put into the show. Again, see, I like this guy. I listened and listened, but did not find Rhett's answer to my question regarding using the same setting / backdrop in games as a way to market them. I think you'll be able to send me an email with his thought on the subject. And Daniel, we're going to do better than that. We're going to go ahead and answer that right now in the middle of your letter. So for those of you who didn't hear Daniel's previous letter, we had answered a slew of questions about, you know, starting up a new game company. But one of them that we kind of missed was, does it make sense to set your games in the same game world? Case in point would be basically the Game of Thrones stuff is all set, right? We now have the Battles of Westmoreland
Westermore.
Thank you, Westermore. Westmoreland being the U.S. general in Vietnam. that whole line is set in, you know, in a particular universe. Or Graxia, which is now coming out from Petroglyph. We have Heroes of Graxia, their deck building game, and then also Guardians of Graxia, their big card based tactical game. So, Rhett, you have the definitive expertise on this, so I'm going to bow to you as to whether or not this makes sense for everyone.
Or whether or not
it makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that it's a strategy that one has to pursue, but I think it's a reasonable strategy. You know, it certainly will help you launch your game universe. The nice advantage of that is you only have to do that once. It's hard to create new and interesting worlds, and if you have an interesting world and you have a bunch of different ways to get into it, you know, you're going to entice a lot of different players, different styles of players. And then again, it's like everything else we've talked about, find out what's working and, you know, capitalize on that. If it turns out that you've designed a board game and a CCG and a RPG and your RPG world is, you know, just going, you know, gung-ho, you know, you just follow it up. And, you know, maybe you have crossover on the two as well. So I think it's a reasonable strategy. I think it's not a required strategy, but I think it's a good choice in a lot of ways.
All right, and I'm gonna add a couple of qualifications on that. If you look at, I'm gonna use one of the games we just mentioned as an example of what can possibly go wrong with this, and that's Graxia. When Heroes of Graxia came out at exactly the same time as Guardians of Graxia, it utilized a lot of the same art and it utilized the same plastic pieces. And obviously set in the same universe, similar title. People thought it was an expansion for the other game, right? People thought that Heroes of Graxia was an expansion for Guardians of Graxia and not necessarily a standalone game.
Right, and it really did cause a lot of confusion.
Yes, and so that's one of the dangers, and part of this is because one was the similarity of the titles, and then the other, I think, was that people don't know Graxia yet. Right, as a fantasy universe. And this is the other thing, too. If people don't know your universe, there's not necessarily any marketing pull to get them to buy multiple products from the same universe.
Absolutely.
Now, that said, from your perspective, you can reuse art, which is always a big thing. And thematic elements, right? You don't have to come up with many, 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 many backstories. Just one will do. And usually that'll work. It's usually a long run thing, though, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're starting at zero with a new game world and a new product. That backstory doesn't matter so much until the game line. If the game is a hit, right? Then the next one, set it in that game line. But if your first game out the door is Crimson Skies, maybe setting it in that universe for the next one isn't gonna, isn't something you want to do.
Well, and your backstory could still be very special. That could be popular on its own right. Crimson Skies is a great example. There's a huge following for the Crimson Skies universe, which is probably a bigger interest than there is in the Crimson Skies board game that had come out from FASA.
And if you look online, WizKids had produced the Crimson Skies semi-collectible version of the aerial dogfighting game, and they're giving them away on eBay because the universe was great, but that game never took off. So, all right, sorry, I'm done.
So, I think we've answered that question.
Yes, I think we have. And again, there are dangers to it. There are rewards to it. Again, as we always say, it may or may not be the right answer for you. Anyway, so the rest of his letter, and I have to read this because it's flattering to us. Thank you once again for an excellent show. Already looking forward to the next one. By the way, what type of games do you two enjoy playing? Got any favorites? Best regards, your faithful listener, Daniel. I think you meant faithful, but what type of games do we enjoy playing? Rhett and I have both previously enjoyed playing each other in Blood Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Blood Bowl's a...
When Rhett and I play Blood Bowl, the gloves come off. Lately I have been playing basically lots of Euro games because I can play those with my family. But in particular, I've gotten involved in a group up the road from me in Grand Rapids, and we're playing a lot of the light historical stuff. So Tide of Iron, the occasional memoir, some Axis and Allies, that kind of stuff. The new Napoleon's Battles game from FFG is going to hit the table soon. So that's a lot of what I've been playing. My true love is the old historical simulations and Deadlands, but haven't been able to play those in a while. So Rhett, how about you? What are your favorite games?
Well, if you can't have told already from a number of things that I've talked about, I'm a hardcore miniatures gamer. I played everything. I just recently haven't had the opportunity or a group locally that's playing any RPGs that I'm interested in. My board game stuff is few and far between, but I at least still play lots of different board game things, Euro games, standard games, family games, all those kind of good things. I'm looking forward to being able to play my Lego games this Christmas. But I'm a hardcore miniatures gamer, and probably the only one you would recognize right offhand is Flames of War. Otherwise, you're going to have to get your old man's hat on to recognize things like Charge, which is a 7 Years War game.
Yeah, Red is such a hardcore miniatures gamer that all his child had to play with growing up were Legos.
That's pretty accurate.
He's not allowed to have any other toys. In fact, he was made to paint the Legos.
I wouldn't go that far, but we do have a quite a profusion of Lego here in my house. The number of 60-gallon tubs will be remain unknown.
That's right. So hey, did I mention that there are Lego games out now? So anyways, our final letter is from a gentleman who's asked us to remain anonymous because he's done some business with both of the parties involved in his letter, but he wanted to get our opinion on it. And that is, hey guys, I wanted your take on this. What is the value of a patent to North Star Games? Now, he explains, the latest Trivial Pursuit mentioned on Purple Pawn, it's the Trivial Pursuit Bet You Know It edition, seems like it may come close to being in violation of Northstar's patent mentioned on Purple Pawn. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But would you, as a small company, take on Hasbro? Ouch. I guess that Northstar, having investors, is probably looking into what action to take, but a lawsuit that goes bad for them could get costly. maybe cost them out of business. Anyways, I wish Dominic and Satish luck. Maybe they could take care to comment on the matter. Or maybe they would care to comment on the matter. But it seems like the new Trivial Pursuit is close enough to infringement to warrant at least some lawyer making money. Thanks for the great podcast. Loyally listening since episode one. So, wow. I tell you, I'm going to have to solicit more listener mail if we're going to get these kind of compliments. And we had talked about this. By the way, the minute I saw the Purple Pawn story about Trivial Pursuit, bet you know it, I knew that this was gonna come up on the show. Either if we didn't bring it up, somebody else would, because we've talked about this before, Rhett, and about the value of a patent to a company that's starting out. But we were talking about this just before the show, and Rhett, what is the value of a patent to Northstar?
Well, you know, I think it's limited. Because there's no such thing as it's not worth anything. Mm-hmm. But when you're going up heads against Hasbro or any other major player, the question is really not how good is your patent, it's how deep is your pockets.
Yeah, and that's, I think, before the show, I think you answered emphatically zero is the value of a patent.
Well, it's more public now. So.
Yeah, okay, okay. I was looking for the soundbite. Anyways, no, the value of the patent is important, mind you. On the other hand, you know that Hasbro's got a lawyer on retainer, and his job is just to file, stays and petitions. You know, just to drag out the court process as long as possible. And Northstar, you know, might not be able to do that. On the other hand, Northstar is already in Target and a lot of other mass retailers and has a strong history there. And that could very well be threatened by a Hasbro product like this. You know, Northstar is not just a, hobby market player. These guys are in mass market retail already with a product that's doing well. So the question is it going to be worth it for them? And more to the point, I should say, we have not looked to see if they've been given due credit, by Hasbro on this. But, you know, it's interesting. Like I said, if you're in mass market already, are you threatened enough by Hasbro producing a similar product? Or are you, is this going to hurt or harm your game sales? Or is this just going to make this into a bigger pie for everybody?
There are a number of, we don't say you shouldn't pursue it if you can find violation. And, the question is, does it violate it? I haven't seen the new Hasbro game to make any statement about it one way or another. But let's just go with some hypotheticals here. And let's say that it does. Northstar could certainly go after it. One of the advantages of going after it right now is that the product hasn't done anything on the shelf so that, the other big box people may or may not be interested in pursuing it, over time. It's certainly an advantage. You might find a friendly court, and the court would, block them from doing any sales on it.
I'm going to say one thing in defense of Hasbro on this. Speaking of, but Mike Gray. All right, Mike Gray, we both know Mike. He's the gatekeeper at Hasbro who evaluates new game designs. Was on a panel with Mike at Gen Con in 2009. And Mike is the quintessential gamer, the ultimate gentleman. And I made a comment. Someone asked basically a similar question about patents. And I said, look, this goes, there hasn't been a successful lawsuit in this industry since Black Tower or Dark Tower. Against Hasbro in the early 80s. Mike was involved in that lawsuit and was actually, I think I mentioned it on the show after Gen Con, was kind of upset because Hasbro wasn't really at fault on that, and they did have to end up settling on it. And because of Mike's involvement as the gatekeeper at Hasbro, I would find it hard to believe that he would purposely step on anybody's toes.
Yeah,
that's where I'm going with that story. I knowing Mike... knowing the people that he's friends with, knowing what kind of a person he is, I can't believe that he would say, we should do this if I think it's going to lead to a lawsuit. I can't see him doing that.
Yeah, I was going to say, games can be similar in style without being similar in play or some other mechanic that
yes.
changes the whole dynamic of the game. And that's all they need. They don't want to get in lawsuits with people. They don't need to knock anybody directly off. It's not worth their while. It's not worth their economics.
Yeah.
You know, this is not Facebook and a company who will remain nameless, but if you're interested, go read some of the Facebook game mail right now, or I should say news stories right now, regarding what's going on in there as far as knockoffs are concerned. You know, as I said, this doesn't behoove Hasbro to steal anybody's product.
No.
And you don't have to be that far off to be considered unique. It's only a 10% requirement, isn't a whole lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the board game industry, sometimes that's as much as you can get. The other thing I want to mention here, too, Trivial Pursuit is a tired brand. All right, if I show up at a party with Trivial Pursuit under Bet You Know It under one arm and Wits and Wagers under the other, it could be the exact same game under the hood, but I can say, you want to play this version of Trivial Pursuit, or do you want to play the all-new Wits and Wagers, right? And all-new Wits and Wagers is going to win out, right? Because Trivial Pursuit as a brand, has been sub-niched to death.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, it's a tired brand. If I'm pitching this to a group of people, there's a chance that Ford did this a couple years ago. All right, Ford reskinned the Ford Windstar and didn't want to have to say it was the refreshed Ford Windstar, so they just launched it as the all new Ford Freestar. Right, I mean, it, like I said, same product with a new name did much better. And again, like I said, these games can be completely the same under the hood, and Wits and Wagers might have the advantage with the consumer because they're not tired of it. So anyways, we'll see how this goes. My guess is in the long run, again, I'm gonna go on for even further about this. We have said over and over again, if you're just starting out, a patent is not necessarily worth the amount of money and the amount of time it's going to take you to get this. You know, I've talked to people who spent anywhere between $5,000 and $17,000 getting a patent on their product, and it's useless if you're going to have to go up against Hasbro and you don't have the money to do it. So, we'll see how that goes. So, Rhett, how can they contact us to send us their listener mail? Now that I'm done rambling on.
Well, we'd love to hear from you, as you can tell. You can contact us.
Especially if you tell us how great we are.
Especially then.
Yes.
You can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. That's com.
Very
good. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. You can phone us, my favorite one, 773-634-9377.
You realize that's almost like a perfect anagram. No, not anagram. It starts out 773 and ends 377. If we could just get all the numbers in there to mirror each other, it would be the same backwards and forwards.
There you go.
We'll have to work on that. And then I just want to mention our RSS feed is purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. So if you want to set up so you just get the Paper Money podcast listed, we're our own feed over on the Purple Pawn. And I want to mention our sponsors, as usual. One of them is the Purple Pawn. We have a new sponsor this week, GameThonic.com. They're a new game retail website. This week, their motto is better than chicken fried bacon on a stick, which you can get at the Texas State Fair. 40% off of pirate games, 30% off of everything else is their grand opening special through the end of the month. Enter Paper Money, all one word, in the coupon code and get an extra 5% off. So you can get 45% off on GMT's Pirates game and a bunch of other pirate games as well. And 35% on everything else. So if you enter Paper Money in the coupon code, you get an extra 5% off at GameThonic.com. GameThonic.com.
And something we left off our podcast today.
Which was?
King Philip's War was released this week.
That's right. You know, it wasn't even released this week. It was released 2 weeks ago. I pre-ordered it. So I got mine early. And you know what? I'm embarrassed to say I've been so busy I have not taken the shrink wrap off.
Well, you know, it's exciting. It's in retail now. It's controversial, so it should be selling billions.
If you mean, yeah. For those of you who weren't paying attention, we did a few stories on King Philip's War way back when, and the American Indian community was initially outraged that there was going to be a board game about King Philip's War until they found out that it was a simulation game, I think is really, I don't think any of them actually looked at the game when they initially protested it, because it, the initial complaints made it sound like it was like Parcheesi. And so anyways, but there was this tempest in a teacup over really what was basically, my guess is they're printing what, like 1,000, 1,500 of these things over at MMP. It's a nice little game, excellent graphics. Looks like the gameplay is going to be pretty good, but yes, game, King Philip's War is out this week. Note the lack of publicity over the launch, Red, and I think we can safely say that that was a tempest in a teacup. On the other one, on the other hand, they hit their P500 number really fast, right?
Yes, they did.
So, anyways, our upcoming stuff. Well, it's fourth quarter, so I'm sure something will pop up. So.
There's, you know, it's.
I was hoping for you to fill in the gap there, Rhett. You can jump in anytime.
I'll just leap on that grenade for you. Well, actually, we have some interesting shows coming up in the not too distant future. We have some of the. When there goes my mind, you know. Anybody wants to catch that, just please net it and bring it back here. I'm
no,
lost.
No, no, that's just, fine. Let's just go with this. Our next show is going to be October 8th, and we may have a really cool guest who's not me on that show. Actually, it'd be interesting to get Dominic on the show, and I apologize. I haven't had a chance to try and track them down. What I don't want to do is manufacture a controversy where there might not be any. But anyways, next show is October 8th. It is fourth quarter. We'll be talking, I'm sure, about some of the fourth quarter news that's coming up. As you guys know who've been with us for a while, we're going to skew fairly mass market from now till the end of the year. Dominion Prosperity is coming out as, I guess, the one of the key. Oh, and Dust Tactics still hasn't officially hit the street. So those are
We still haven't seen Dust Tactics, though. I understand pre-orders are in for it, so I would anticipate between now and Christmas.
Yes, I'm predicting that one is going to be October.
But I think that's a pretty good shot. I don't think we'll see it
if
next
only
week.
Because, yeah, we won't see it next week. If only because a game like that, they had a bunch of Gen Con. I can't believe they assembled. I think that's just a shipping issue at this point. I can't believe they assembled that many that far ahead of the rest of the curve. But I think we'll see that one in October. But anyways, yeah, like I said, so the news is going to skew that way and towards retail, really from now until the end of the year. And, and that's just the way it should be, right? You know, as manufacturers, if we're still trying to print games in this part of the year, we're doing it slightly wrong.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you can still be printing games up until November very successfully,
yes.
At least. But the answer is, they're already ready.
Yes. No, I was talking. I was talking yesterday to a good friend of mine who runs a company that prints. They do boxes and they print game boards. Really, one of the better companies in the U.S. on that. And their production is basically booked, not entirely booked solid, but booked pretty steeply through the end of November, and then it drops off like a stone really until about March is the way that normally works.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard.
Yep, very standard. So anyways, folks, we'll talk to you next week on October 8th. Thank you very much for listening this week. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp. Have a great day.
It's me. I'm the guest. See? I got you to laugh.
Okay, finally you got me to laugh.